Welcome to the God in the Ordinary podcast, an interview show for believers looking for encouragement in how to reveal God in their everyday. Your host, singer-songwriter Sharon Tedford.
Today's guest knows the power of preparation and improvisation. He understands the importance of connection and joyfully uses his gifts in his day-to-day job, communicating the gospel in both spiritual and secular settings. My guest, comedian and preacher, Andy Kind. Hello, Andy. Thank you so much for joining us today. Would you introduce yourself to us and tell us whereabouts in the world you live?
Hello. Good day to you. Yes, I am in England, in a place called Stoke-on-Trent, which is right in the centre of England, halfway between Manchester and Birmingham, but delighted to be joining you for this talk.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited about sharing you with everybody. I have had so much fun researching you. I have had belly laughs and giggles, but I know he's going to have some wisdom to share with us because we're not all comedians. Although a lot of us think we're funny, our children tell us otherwise. But hopefully this conversation is going to inspire you to reveal God in whatever ordinary life you live. So Andy, you probably know that we ask all of our guests to share a reflection on Isaiah 61, and you are no exception to the rule. So would you like to do that for us?
It would be my pleasure. If, as Isaiah 61 verse 1 claims, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is not actually on me or on us, then I can have no confidence going into places of darkness and despair. In our modern society, people say you should trust yourself above all things. Honestly, I am the last person who should be trusted with some of my life choices. If I applied for the job of manager of my life and my resume was hell while I've managed my life so far, I wouldn't get the job. I need something more to give me confidence that I can negotiate a life in the arts and the comedy world. Knowing that the Spirit of the Lord is upon me helps. It gives me not just a permission, but a mandate to walk with bold confidence onto stages around the world. Because if we haven't been sent to bind up the brokenhearted and declare freedom for the prisoners, who else is going? It's not true to say that comedians are modern-day prophets. I'd love that to be true, but it's not. For the most part, comedians are yes-men and snake-oil salesmen. Our job is to entertain the audience, not to flash-mob our own moralistic TED talk. And audiences don't want to be challenged, but they do want to be healed. So many of us are wounded, battered, and broken as a result of the last few years. And so to be commissioned to go into these broken places with these bruised people and proclaim good news in the form of laughter is a huge privilege. Isaiah 61 verse 4 talks about the places long devastated. Today, those places are not ancient cities and settlements, but individual hearts and souls. That's why comedy can be such a gift. When you laugh, it releases endorphins that makes you feel physically better. More than that, laughter is just tension leaving your body. In that way, telling jokes is like being an exorcist. For the time the audience is laughing, all their tension and anxiety is cast out. Laughter, then, is like a leaf blower for the soul. All art points and hints, but it doesn't bludgeon. I try to use my comedy to point away from mourning towards joy, away from ashes towards beauty, away from despair towards gratitude. With laughter, my trusty leaf blower.
Thank you, Andy. You just talked about the importance of entertaining your audience in your reflection there. How do you balance entertainment with sharing the gospel? Is the gospel entertaining?
That's a really good question, and I think it's all about context. What I would always say is that it's okay to have a good time listening to the good news, and the idea that sharing the gospel should be completely unadorned of joy or entertainment. I just don't buy that at all. I don't know where it comes from. Augustine, one of the church fathers, you know, the great names of the church fathers in the fourth century, said that preaching should do three things, one of which was delectare, which is Latin for to rivet or delight. So I think if it's good enough for Augustine, it's good enough for me. But certainly when I'm doing comedy, I'm trying to entertain people. I'm not trying to communicate the gospel when I'm doing comedy. The comedy comes first on a comedy night. And then often what will happen is I'll be interviewed. If it's a church gig, particularly, I'll be interviewed and then I'll share the gospel in that. Laughter is all about recognition, and people only laugh at things that they recognize. So as I sort of hinted there, it's not my job to flash mob my own TED talk. I'm not going into these situations to try and proselytize, but simply to bring joy and laughter. And then off the back of that, you can share something of who you are. But it's very difficult to be positive and funny about something that the majority of the audience don't agree with you on. That's the same across the board. So I'm never trying to make funny jokes about being a Christian in the way, in an attempt to get people to become Christians. There tends to be a break almost between the comedy stuff and the gospel sharing, and that is best framed via an interview, I think.
Yeah, that's a helpful thought there. So why do you want to make people laugh? Why do we want to be made to laugh? What is that in us, do you think?
Again, it's that healing thing. Endorphins are released every time you laugh, and it genuinely makes you feel better about yourself. Studies have been done, evidence to suggest that you can be cured of pretty bad chronic diseases through exposure to laughter and comedy. It's quite weak evidence, but there is at least some evidence. For me, I just always loved laughing. I always loved being around people and having a good chuckle. So from a very early age, all I wanted to do was to be a comedian. And when I then became a Christian at the age of 22, the idea that maybe that desire wasn't totally random or simply a product of sociobiological evolution sort of really resonated with me. And so, yeah, that was it, really. Once I became a Christian, I thought, okay, maybe there's this permission then. Maybe there is something over my life, some kind of calling to go into the world of comedy. And so it has proven. I've been doing this for 18 years now, and I have done other stuff alongside it, but it's always been my main stream of income.
Do you think that we are seen as Christians by those who are not believers as serious and boring?
Yes, I do think that. And that's twofold. Some of that is because people aren't paying attention. And people like to stereotype and pigeonhole and typecast. And over here in the UK, it's probably the case that most people have got a religious grandparent from whom they take all their derived views of what a Christian is. But it's changing here. I mean, we are different in the UK to the States. We are ahead of you in our secularization. So it's very common these days to find teenagers who don't know anything about Jesus at all. Whereas when I was growing up, everyone knew who Jesus was. Most people didn't care, but everyone knew who Jesus was. I think we're entering an era where people don't have those stereotype views of Christians. They actually don't know what Christians believe. Probably if you listen to the leftist agenda, which tends to come out mainly on social media and not so much in day-to-day life, then Christians are bigots. But people don't go beyond that. And so every conversation I have with people when they find out I'm a Christian is an opportunity to unpick some of those lies and fairy stories about what Christians actually believe. But yeah, I think generally speaking, there's this idea that Christians are moralistic and legalistic. And sadly, a lot of the time that is true. And I've been thinking about this a lot recently. A largely Christian audience is harder in lots of ways to play to than a comedy club, because Christians in general tend to have a real heart for people and for social justice. And so there are certain topics that you start talking about and they don't know what you're going to say, but they can clam up because they're worried what you might say. And so when you then get to the punchline and you're not saying anything offensive, by that point they've already clammed up. So yeah, Christian audiences are hard, and yet, you know, you persist because it's all about finding that balance between what you want to say and what they want you to say, and how do you entertain them while also maintaining artistic integrity. And it's the same issue in a comedy club, but the line of entertainment and artistic integrity is probably further afield.
Yeah. So when you're working in a comedy club, do you identify as a Christian? I'm not saying that you don't, but do you specifically stand up and say, yeah, when I go to church, or do you keep away from that because it makes the audience clam up in a different way?
Yes, exactly that. But the flip side of that. So I don't talk about being a Christian on stage. In the green room, I see my mission field being at comedy clubs. So it's the other comedians that you hang out with. That's where the mission is there. On stage, the mission is to be funny because I need to get the next gig. And it would be lovely, wouldn't it, if I went on stage and preached the gospel and talked about being a Christian. At the end, everyone was like, wow, we didn't like him at first, but he really won us round with his contrary view of how the world works. It's not Mighty Ducks 2. It's not Hollywood. And actually, most promoters in the UK wouldn't want me to say anything like that. So if someone shouted out, are you a Christian? I'd say, yes, of course I am. But I don't talk about it because, again, comedy is about recognition. Laughter is about recognition. If they don't recognize it, they're not going to laugh at it. And you're there to make them laugh. You're there to serve the audience, to bless them, certainly. But the way you do that is with joy and hope. And I think for me, by staying away from crudeness and crassness and gratuitousness, I'm not offended by what other comedians do. I'm not offended by content. I'm offended by people not speaking authentically. I don't prescribe what other comedians should talk about, but I do think people should talk authentically from their own voice and worldview. And so that's what I try to do. And what I try to do is to build people up, talk about my own stupidity rather than other people's, and to stay away from these big ticket items such as politics and religion, because I'm not trying to be divisive in what I do.
It sounds like when you're preparing for a gig or a set that it's probably done in two different ways. What typically goes into doing that? How long does it take, and what do you do as your foundation to build your presentation on?
Yeah, so it doesn't take very long these days because, again, it's very practiced, but I will always try and catch a look at the audience, and I'll work out on some level the average age or the social demographic. If it's a church gig, I'll try and gauge what the generational split is. And a church gig isn't just Christians. It has invited guests as well. But a church gig tends to have an older average age. Comedy clubs tend to have a younger average age. And then you're trying to filter out the different references, because there's no point talking about TikTok to baby boomers, and there's no point talking about, you know, the Vietnam War. Not that I talk about that anyway, but there's no point talking about the 60s and 70s to Generation Zers. So it's all about what references do I think will work. I always start in the same way and I always end in roughly the same way. But I've got hours of material that I can draw from. It's then thinking what's going to work tonight. But because I do a lot of crowd interaction and banter as well, I never have a complete set list that I just stick to. Whilst that would give lots of comedians a scaffolding, for me, it feels more like a straitjacket. I do need to be able to divert and diverge and sort of bounce around a little bit. And on a good day, that's really helpful, because you can seemingly bring subjects out of thin air when actually you wrote a joke about that 7 years ago and you've just brought it into the conversation that you were having with the person in the front row. Yeah, preparation doesn't take a huge amount of time, but what does take a huge amount of time is writing new stuff and getting that ready. That's a difficult task. And I have found that my new material gets worked out over a series of gigs. It's almost never good. It's always never anywhere near as good as I want it to be on the first try. But if I get a couple of laughs in it from a segment, then I will work on it. I'll change things around and try and persist.
Sounds like you have a really good mix of preparation and improvisation. Are both of those sides equally important to you?
Yes. 90% of anything is hard work. And I wish I'd really known this earlier. I probably would have been more successful as a comedian if I'd worked harder. I have worked hard at points, but I also have had phases and seasons where I haven't worked that hard. But if you look at top athletes, whether it's this side of the pond or the other side, they're already the best at what they're doing, yet they go into training every day and they train to be better, because they know that you're either getting better or you're getting worse. You're never really standing still. If you stop training and stop improving and you lose that humility, then you will get worse. So it's all about hard work. And even the improvisation stuff is a practiced thing. The reason I'm able to improvise is because I've done it thousands of times on stage. And so you can usually bring something from your mind palace or your muscle memory to bear on the gig. Or you just know that if you keep chatting and bantering, you'll find something. And in that way, bantering and improvisation, it's a bit like being in the Matrix. Things do start to slow down, and there is this weird sort of reality that your mind works faster on stage than it does off stage. I've noticed that on a few occasions where I've said something on stage. I thought I would never have come up with that in a day-to-day conversation. But again, you're training and you're honing your mind. There's a phrase that the SAS use, which is train hard, fight easy. You know, the idea is that if you are prepared and working hard, even if you're not getting everything right, when it comes to the battle, or in this case, the gig, the time on stage, it will feel a lot easier. And that's absolutely true. And so I'm trying to get better, even after 18 years, trying to get better again at preparing, even preparing for the unscripted bits.
Yes, I think that adrenaline is a beautiful gift, and it's a gift that goes on top of preparation, that we can build on that. So when you do get some improvisation with an audience, what's your underlying intention in that moment, apart from, I want to make everyone laugh? Because, you know, stand-up comedians can be known for being a bit aggressive and a bit harsh with people in their audiences. What's your intention?
Yeah, my intention is twofold. First of all, to highlight the silliness in what the person is saying. And so for that, you just keep them talking long enough and they'll say silly things. But also to not hurt them. And again, this is definitely a skill, but also a bit of a lottery, because I haven't always got it right. You don't know the person you're talking to. And it is possible to say something quite tame and yet wound somebody or make them feel uncomfortable. And I've done that plenty of times, not by being crude or aggressive, but again, some people just being spoken to in public in front of a crowd is a lot for them. So my aim is always to get to a laugh or a laugh, but it's equally to make sure that I'm treating the person with respect and honor. I am there to honor the crowd, whether it's a comedy club or a church gig, because they're the ones who've paid. They're not there to help me. I'm there to serve them. In that respect, it's ministry. I probably don't think about comedy as being ministry in the way that I used to. And I think that's probably helpful. I think it is probably just my calling and my job and my vocation. But there are elements of ministry that I can bring to bear. And that really means honoring people, treating them as valued and made in the image of God, and wanting them to have a nice time, not to use them as sacrificial lambs for the rest of the audience.
You're listening to God in the Ordinary with me, Sharon Tedford, and my guest, Andy Kind. So, Andy, not only do you do comedy, but you also preach and teach, which is fantastic. Can you talk about the connection between convincing and persuading and how that resonates in both the pulpit and in the comedy club?
Wow, that's a good question, isn't it? Yes. You can't force anyone to be convinced. People ultimately, and having worked in church leadership a little bit during the pandemic and the time previous to that, I'm very aware that people will believe what they want to believe ultimately, and people will ultimately do whatever they want to do. So all you can do is share ideas. And that might sound very postmodern, but we are in a postmodern age. And the idea that you can just prescribe behavior for people didactically, it just doesn't work these days. So what I've tried to do with my most recent book, Hidden in Plain Sight, and what I've tried to do with preaching, and I've shifted in this over the last few years. I started preaching in 2016, and I probably was a bit more didactic. I was probably influenced by some of the big charismatic names in American sort of evangelicalism, where I'm probably not now. I'm more content to be British and to be a sort of G.K. Chesterton, Tolkien, C.S. Lewis type of gospel sharer. And what these people did, what these, you know, great British writers and thinkers did, was they shared their ideas obliquely, and people were willing, you know, were free to believe or not believe. And I would always argue for Christianity as the best story out there. I would always try to show why that makes more sense than any other worldview. But I try to frame it in those ways, because what I don't want to do is to build barricades between myself and an audience, either with comedy or with preaching. And it's just tactically better to share things in those terms, to be able to say, this is what you believe, this is what I believe, this is why I think what I believe makes more sense, rather than you are wrong, I am right. Nobody in the history of the world has ever reacted well to being told that someone else is right and they're wrong. That doesn't happen. And so what we're trying to do is to win people. But the way we win people is by respecting them and understanding that they probably have baggage and a backstory and brokenness as well, and not trying to bludgeon them with, you know, some sort of moralistic code. It's good news for a reason, and it has to sound like good news, the gospel. So I've taken this current approach and may well change it again. I often change my approach when I'm rubbish at something or when something isn't working. So that's the approach, is certainly to persuade, but also to trust the audience to see the symbolism and the themes, and to go away and think about it. People don't want to be taught, and this is why I'm a preacher and not a teacher, and this is where it's a benefit to be that. My salary isn't paid based on whether people imitate me as I imitate Christ, fortunately. So, yes, I'm not an ethicist. I'm not a moral teacher. I'm sharing the themes of the gospel. And I tell stories on stage as a comedian. I tell stories in my written work. I'm trying to communicate the themes of the gospel and the joy and the hope and the freedom found in the gospel, which aren't found in any of these other big stories. But I try to be a bit more oblique in what I'm talking about. Because again, over in the UK, where I think even someone like Tim Keller is mistaken, and I would never say that about anything else he's written, because he's a hero. But Tim Keller, one of the great, you know, apologists and teachers of our age, says that all preaching should be exegetical. It should come from the Bible. I don't believe that's true over here in the United Kingdom, because people don't know what the Bible is. They don't care what the Bible is. So I think we obviously do need to get people to the Word of God ultimately. But that is something down the line. I think in my culture, in our culture over here, the foundation we build on is not how clever we are or how much Bible study we've done, but what does the person we're talking to currently believe about themselves, the world, and the universe? And then how do we build the bridge from that to the gospel, and how do we improve upon what they currently believe? So when people say to me, what is the gospel? What does that mean? For me, the gospel is anything true about Jesus that supersedes and improves on what someone currently believes about themselves and their life and the universe. And that's just quite a helpful way of keeping things simple. I've blathered on there.
It was good. It was good. Let's talk a bit more about that, about the bridges and the foundation, because earlier in our discussion, we were talking about how you use preparation and improvisation in your comedy set. How can we use that as believers when we go in to share the gospel with people? Do you think we need preparation and improvisation in that way too? Obviously, we're not going in with a script, but should we be moving in the way of allowing ourselves to improvise, reaching across, using a bridge to reach people?
Yes, I think improvisation is more important than written preparation. The preparation needs to be in terms of the mindset. So what we need to do is stop believing that we're performance-based or numbers-driven. The vast majority of people I've shared the gospel with are still not Christians. So by any business model, I am a failure, and I would be sacked if that was my job. But we are not performance-based. We are grace-based. Anyone listening who wants to share the gospel could get it wrong, could try to share the gospel with a thousand people between now and the end of their lives and get it completely wrong on every occasion. And the Lord would still say to you at the end of your life, well done, good and faithful servant, because we are not performance-based. And so the preparation is preparation to fail, not preparation to succeed. Preparation to not worry when people reject us. The thing that stops us from sharing the gospel is our fear of looking silly, our fear of getting it wrong, our fear of being rejected. Once you decide that it doesn't matter whether you get rejected, once you decide that you probably will be rejected and that's not your problem, then sharing the gospel becomes much easier. The problem for the Western church is not the unbelief of the unbelievers, it's the unbelief of the believers. And part of it is that we have enthroned our own sense of pride where this sort of sacrificial offering should be put. We actually want to believe that, you know, because we're more than conquerors, the scriptures say, therefore, most of the time people should become Christians. But that isn't how it works. It just isn't how it works. Most of the time, when you share the gospel, people aren't going to become Christians. And so you have to act out of something else. You have to act out of your identity, which is hidden with Christ. And there's a couple of examples of this. So in Ezekiel 2, God says to Ezekiel, I'm sending you to the house of Israel, they're a rebellious nation. But whether they listen or refuse to listen, they'll know that they've had a prophet amongst them. So God says, you go and say this to this group of people. And whether they listen or refuse to listen, they'll know they've had a prophet amongst them. What he doesn't say is, because I'm sending you here and I'm God and I'm sovereign and I know what's going to happen, they'll definitely listen to you. He doesn't give everybody successful campaigns to run. He says, you go and do this and you act out of your identity and the rest is nothing to do with you. And it's the same in Luke 10, where the Lord sends out the disciples in twos and they come back and they say, Lord, even the demons obey us when we speak in your name. And Jesus basically says, that's not the point. He says, I saw Satan fall from heaven, but don't rejoice that the spirits obey you. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven. So it's the same thing. It's about identity. Whether demons flee or not, your name is written in heaven. If you're a Christian, your name is written in heaven. That's the thing to rejoice in. And then whether people refuse to listen or they do listen, it really isn't anything to do with you. And once we get rid of that fear, once we get rid of that entitlement and that false idea of what it means to be a preacher or a good news sharer, actually, the numbers will go up because we're so unconcerned by what people think about us.
Andy, I have got a feeling that you've just set a lot of people free from fear and also from not speaking to people because they're afraid that they're not getting their wages, as you said, by seeing a certain number of people become Christians. Thank you so much for reminding us that it's not performance-based, it's grace-based. That is so freeing for us to be able to talk about Jesus in everything that we do, wherever we are, that when it comes up naturally, just chatter about Jesus. Just do it. And the more we do it, like you just said, the less stage fright we'll have because we realize that rejection doesn't matter. We have our names written in the book of life. Thank you so much, Andy. So people are going to definitely want to read about you more. And I would love for you to tell us where we can find you, what we can find about you, because I mean, before you say it, everyone needs to go read your blog. Your writing style is so engaging, is so great. So tell us where we can find you.
Okay, so I would love people to follow me, find me, get in touch with me. My website is andykind.co.uk, and there's a link from there to my YouTube channel, which is simply Andy Kind Comedy. So if you type Andy Kind Comedy into YouTube, you will find me. I'm in my 40s, so I'm not on TikTok at the moment, but maybe when my daughters get a bit older, we'll set up our own TikTok channel or something. And then I've got some books available as well, and they're very easily found here in the UK. Amazon is probably the best bet for people listening stateside. So again, if you type Andy Kind into Amazon, my most recent book, Hidden in Plain Sight, can be downloaded using Kindle. You probably can't buy the print copy of that if you're in the States. But if you get in touch, I can probably send you one. I've done that to a few people across the different states. So those are the primary ports of call for Andy Kind.
Thank you so much. I want you to talk as well, just briefly, about the other thing that you offer on your website at the moment, which is also about teaching people how to be better preachers. What's that about?
Yes. So I have recently started, and partly through expediency rather than simply a selfless desire to serve, I wasn't making enough money. And so I decided I needed to do something else alongside the gigs as the gigs build back up again post-pandemic. Choosing comedy and preaching as your main income stream was never going to be a good idea. But the pandemic certainly didn't help. So as these things build back up, I thought, well, okay, I arguably have a unique skill set and backstory, certainly within the UK Christian world, and I think probably quite rare in the West as well, which is of being a preacher and a comedian and a writer. So I thought, how can I serve and bless people with their preaching? I'm not setting myself up to be the great teacher of preachers, but simply to say, hey guys, I've come from this other world. I've come through this dimension from the arts and from the comedy world. And here are some of the things I've learned. Let me transfer them to you so that the good stuff you're already doing can improve. So I'm doing that, and I'm largely doing it over Zoom, which means that if there are people in the States who would like to get better at preaching, then absolutely they can contact me and we can sign them up for one of the Zoom courses. And that would be amazing, actually. So I've got a guy from California who's on one of them at the moment. It's just about using some of the stuff I've learned as a comedian to try and help preachers get better, because it's the same skill set, largely. 90% of preaching and comedy is the same skill set. It's a different character set. So when you're doing comedy, you have to be the alpha male, but there's already an alpha male on board when you're preaching. So preaching is self-denying, it's getting out of the way, whereas comedy is self-elevating. So there is a different end game, but the preparation is largely the same.
That's great. Thank you so much. So any speakers or preachers, highly recommend that to you. Andy, you've given us a lot to think about, whether we are speakers or writers or mothers or people who work in Walmart or Asda. You've just reminded us that whatever our skill set is, we need to share it. And I want to remind us all what you said right at the top of the show, which is, if we haven't been sent to bind up the brokenhearted and declare freedom for the prisoners, who else is going? Thanks so much, Andy, for joining us today. It's been so much fun having you here on God in the Ordinary.
Be my pleasure.
You've been listening to God in the Ordinary with my guest, Andy Kind, and me, Sharon Tedford. You can find out more about this comedian, preacher, and writer at his website, andykind.co.uk.
For more information and show notes, go to 61-things.com. Producer is Gary Dell, and God in the Ordinary is a Wise Word Radio 61 Things co-production.